Welcome to the Willie Jackerson Experiment. I'm your host, the one, the only, Willie Jackerson. All right, awesome. I have a really great episode for you. I decided to do the Legends of NASCAR, and it's pretty awesome, like, looking back, just kind of how long the sport has really ran. And it kind of helped out the auto industry kind of develop more horsepower, develop faster cars, you know, develop more technology for braking and steering. And, you know, there's some pretty funny stories that I have, kind of some of the NASCAR drivers sharing some of their stories, and just kind of going to look at maybe finding some NASCAR metal to make sure we keep America metal again. So I'll try to keep the description of the whoever's stuff I use so that you can go over and subscribe to their channel on YouTube. And I just really enjoy doing these every week. It's a lot of fun, and trying to keep America metal. So make sure you check out the Willie's Mile High metal playlist on Spotify, and you can throw it on shuffle, and I have almost, I'm probably getting really close to 20 hours of music on there. I try to put every song that I use on my episode in there, and then that way you can kind of go and check it out. And if you're not feeling like listening to podcasts, you can just listen to some metal music, and it'll take you through. If you subscribe to Spotify Premium, then you don't get the ads. So that's kind of something that I found out, that if you don't like having the ads pop up on you, then you subscribe to Spotify Premium, and it'll knock the ads out for you. So I really appreciate everyone joining every week. It just means a lot how much you guys enjoy these. And I've been noticing a lot of people popping in, and this was kind of a request. Somebody had asked me a while back if I've ever done a NASCAR one, and I haven't. So I decided to do the Legends of NASCAR this week. So thanks you guys for joining. Really appreciate you popping in every week. I hope you guys have a great week. Hopefully you remember to make every day an easy day. Peace.
Show stopping on the highway, singing about the wall,
getting old,
getting great,
getting ripped off,
underpaid,
getting head,
getting took. And I tell you, folks, it's harder than it looks.
It's a long way to the top if you want it. Rock and roll fall. It's a long way to the top if you want to build that wall. If you think it's easy doing one night stands, try playing in a one-man band. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll fall. Build that wall. That wall. Build that wall.
We're now live at the NASCAR press conference, where the drivers of Saturday's race are gearing up and taking questions from reporters.
So, what's your guys' take on the track here? Any concerns?
Well, I think it's a fine track. You know, the techs have done a really good job of making sure the banks are grafted down to the right specs, and there shouldn't be any problems.
Yeah, we like the track, yep. We got a grafted banks and specs. It's like an oval, so we're going to drive straight, and then we're going to be turning to the lamp.
They're saying hot weather tomorrow. Any concerns about restrictor plate or brake fade problems?
Of course, anytime you're dealing with high humidity and temperatures, you need to compensate your brake fluid, but the plates themselves...
Compensate your brake fluid and get your brake working so you can stop sometimes.
Excuse me, who is this kid? Is he even a driver?
Ew, bring it on, Earnhardt. You scared of the competition? I'm just as poor and stupid as you. I'm going to drive, and I'm going to go fast, and I'm going to turn to the left sometimes.
Can we just get back to the subject of racing, please?
Hell, bring it on, Danica. You dumb bitch think I can't steer left better than you?
Careful up here about 100 yards, Jack. There's a wrecked car on the right side. You're gonna wanna watch for it here. You're gonna wanna watch it all around the right side.
Yeah,
ah! You see that? Danica Patrick tried to get in my way. That pisses me off.
That's fucking gay as hell.
Oop, I'm coming up on that turn thing again. I got to steer left. Get out of the way, you idiots. I'm trying to win this damn thing.
There you go. You're back on the track.
I'm back on the track. Kenny, what the hell are you doing? Get off the car, Kenny!
Oh man, our friend Kenny's trying to break the windshield. Ain't that just gay as hell?
We're trading paint. Oh, it's so easy for you, isn't it, Kenny? I have to prove myself. Sorry, dude, I'm winning this race. With the break. Bye, Kenny.
Oh, Jesus, there's a little boy on the track.
In the South Park episode, I was trying like heck. I was at a photo shoot all day yesterday, and you know, that's when all the news came in about being in the South Park episode, and so I was trying to watch it last night on the way to the track on my iPad, but it wasn't working out. So I still haven't seen the full version of it. I saw just a little clip, but I think something about being poor and stupid was the theme of the episode. And you know, I think that anytime someone takes the time to, and I'm not speaking about me in general, I'm talking about obviously, you know, NASCAR, because it was about NASCAR and it was running in cars, and I just was lucky enough to be in it. I think anytime somebody takes the time to make fun of you is a compliment. So I was talking about with Tony Jr. in the truck and some other guys, and everybody found it hilarious. So I don't think anybody takes offense to that. And I think that we all made history being in South Park. That's pretty cool. And then I'm going to be in The Simpsons later this year. So it's a pretty good year for me. I got referenced on Hannah Montana. It's a big year for me. What's it? I got killed, I was told. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, some days I feel like that might be the easy road.
All right, Danica, thanks a lot. We appreciate your time.
All right, thank you.
race, there's two parts of this story. We changed our right front spring once in practice, and Paul will appreciate this because he's a crew chief and a car guy. But in order to put a right front spring in, you got to lower the suspension down, and these cars have brake lines in them, and it's a flexible brake line. But these the way the spring went in, the brake line was too short, and it broke. So we changed the spring, and I went out on the track. And about that time, the yellow came out for practice. Somebody wrecked, and it was right at the end of practice. And so practice got canceled right there. But I was already out on the line. And for those of you that have been to Charlotte and know how that works, at the end of nationwide practice, cup qualifying begins. And so for whatever reason, I don't know, remember exactly why, instead of doing a lap around the track and return to the garage, everybody did like this half lap backwards down that quarter mile track they have at Charlotte. Well, I didn't realize I didn't have any brakes. So we grabbed like second or third gear. We're going like 65 mile an hour backwards around this racetrack. And I make this right hander into the quarter mile. And the whole cup field's there for qualifying. I mean, the whole cup field. I'm going like 60 mile an hour. And I go to hit the brakes, nothing. And all I can see is all these people, all these cars, and Jeff Gordon's car is right in front of me. I got no brakes, and I'm out of control. So I make this hard left and go through the infield, and I'm just tear this car all up. And the wrecker driver comes and gets me, and he yells in the window in this very southern voice, you know, a couple obscenities with a basically saying, "What were you doing?" And I'm like, "I didn't have any brakes." So as it would happen, we replaced that brake line with another brake line that just happened to be even shorter and broke in the race. So we get in the race and we do this first run in the race, and I'm running pretty good. I'm running like 15th or 20th, which again, for where I was at in my career, was great. You know, it was awesome. That was all I could ask for. And there's a green flag pit cycle, and getting ready for the green flag pit cycle, and I push the brakes. We're halfway through the run, and the brake line breaks off this car. And so this car won't stop. So we talk about it for 15, 20 laps. And we're talking about, well, when this green flag pit stop comes, you know, just we're going to have to get the car stopped because the car's not going to stop. You know, it's got no brakes. And we get on pit road, and I go to pull into my pit stall. And everybody jumps across the wall, jack in hand, everything, and I just, everyone forgot that I had no brakes, and I just right through the pit stall. So I go, this is in the middle of green flag pit stops. So I'm like 20 boxes down, no brakes. So the whole crew runs over and starts to push the car backwards. And I get Joey spotting the whole time, and Joey's over the rail going, "Oh my God," you know, and Joey's real exaggerated about it. And we finally get, they're pushing my car backwards really, really fast. And I get five stalls away, and they're pushing me backwards, and they do like this push off motion, like a bobsled. And so what happens? I still have no brakes. So I'm going down pit road at what feels like 35 mile an hour. I know a human being can only run like 10 or 15, but it felt like this car was going 35 mile an hour backwards under green in the middle of green flag pit stops, no brakes. And of course, so what happens? I go flying through pit box backwards and almost up on the racetrack backwards. And my dad comes over the radio at that moment and goes, "What part of no brakes don't you understand?" And he just goes off on these crew guys. And for me and for Joey, that was one of those moments where we bonded together and just have told that story. And Joey's been with me almost ever since. So that's how far Joey and I have come together. But we still tell that story all the time. So now you know the story.
1 year ago, Steve, Dale Earnhardt, less than confident with the current rules package to win his second Daytona 500, but he won the last plate race of 2000, and Dale looking very strong during Speed Weeks. Can you win your second 500 today?
Well, we got a good shot at it. Got a good race car. Wasn't really excited about the car yesterday afternoon, the last practice, but the car, it come around. I think it's going to be okay. We've got a good engine in it, but a little wind today. A little exciting. I think it's going to be some exciting racing. Going to see something you probably hadn't ever seen on Fox.
The seven-time champ rolls off seven today. Genie.
This comes from NBR channel, so check it out. Subscribe on YouTube.
Now this story is from memory, as I could not locate the original post from where I read this. But from what I remember, this covers the night of Dale Earnhardt's 1995 Brickyard 400 win. Dale had stayed celebrating the victory, and dusk had begun to set on the 2.5 mile oval. Through some sort of means, he got a motorcycle, and decided he was going to take one lap around the track as night fell, to take in the sights one last time. Dale flipped up the kickstand and started his celebratory lap from the yard of bricks. He rolled through turn one, and then down the short chute in the two. Everything seemed normal, as he slowly took everything in at his pace of 40 miles an hour. He made it to the backstretch, and according to some watching him, Dale, about halfway down the straightaway, went from 40 to 100 miles an hour as he darted around the rest of the lap. Some thought he was having fun. When he got back to the front stretch, the 7-time champion was pale white and he was visibly shaken. Apparently the track he thought was desolate was well alive, and while not described greatly, what he saw scared him to the point where he wanted to leave the track immediately. Again, this is something that isn't cited very well. Along with the mysticism of Indy, comes a belief among some that the track belongs to the fallen in the night hours, the time for the souls who have perished there to rest. And according to locals on a very few offhand encounters, there's ghosts and spirits that roam the Brickyard, haunting racing's most hallowed grounds. This one again is another Earnhardt tale, and involves the 1990 Daytona champion Derek Cope. Many know the famous finish where Dale dominates the majority of the 1995 100, but blows a tire in the turn 3 on the last lap. Cope skirts by and wins his first career race and the Daytona 500. Fast forward 31 years, and on the weekend of the 20th anniversary of Earnhardt's passing, and the supposed last start of Derek Cope's career, Derek starts the race as near last. And on lap 3, the classic silent lap for Dale Earnhardt begins. As Mike Joy monologues, the field heads through 3 and 4, and the caution is called. Derek Cope is in the wall. He blew what appears to be a right rear tire heading into turn 3, and slammed the fence. Now, I don't know if this is more of an urban legend, or a freaky coincidence, but Cope's career ends with the way he beat Earnhardt, and a finish of last place. This story comes from a user on Reddit. I'll see if I'll find the actual post and link it in the description. But the story goes as this. During a race at Phoenix in the late 80s, early 90s, Jeff Bodine was approached by a woman who had lost her husband. She requested that her husband wanted to ride around the track, but never got the opportunity. But she offered the second best thing, apparently. She gave them her husband's urn and asked if Jeff could take it around the track. Jeff and his team weirdly accepted the gesture and went out to turn a few laps. As Jeff went around with the urn, he took it easy before accelerating quickly and then back into the pits. He did that because the urn had come undone and ashes had spilled all over the car, including on the Jeff himself. It is unclear how it was cleaned up and what was done after, but nonetheless, definitely an experience probably Jeff Bodine or the rest of the team will never forget. This story was briefly mentioned in the first edition of this series, but I'll go more in depth with this one. Larry Smith was a North Carolina native that wanted to make his go at becoming a NASCAR driver. He ran full-time in 1972, logging his rookie year, and in 1973 he made the trip to Talladega. On lap 14, Smith lost control and spun into the outside wall. The contact was light, and the team saw the car come to rest in fairly decent condition. They began preparing for the repairs for the minor damage, and the car sat running still. Safety crews finally decided to go over. It had been a while, and Smith still hadn't moved from the minor accident. The crews got to the car and they walked up to it. They looked inside, and Larry was dead. It was a shock to everyone involved, and a study went into how he died from such an impact. It was found that Larry had a naturally softer skull than the average person, and that he had sustained unknown skull fractures in the past. There was also a rumor that he was taking the padding out of his helmet due to the discomfort it was causing him. But this rumor is unproven, and no one knows if that contributed to this accident. The mystery to how he died comes to a quick stop when you look at the photo of Larry's car in the crash. Now, looking at this, how in the hell did they think this was a light crash? The roof is bent in, and the whole right side is crushed. Let alone if they thought the crash was survivable, there was no way in hell he was going to drive away from this. My only assumption as to why people thought the wreck wasn't bad was that the damage happened in such a way that people from the infield, especially the pits if this was in turn one, couldn't see the damaged part of the car. If you imagine it and look at it from if you were standing on the ground from the pits, you only see the undamaged left side. The whole right front was destroyed, but everything else was fine. Regardless of what the whole situation may be, 31-year-old Larry Smith was killed. The fact that he had to live with multiple injuries to suffer through before this makes this story that much sadder. This is perhaps one of the most sensitive topics to talk about, but it's forever been about motorsports. What happens to a car once a driver has died in it? Usually the cars are destroyed, or popular practice is to bury the car. This is likely what happened to Dale Earnhardt's car, though not confirmed, is rumored to be buried somewhere on Richard Childress' property. There are some other weird theories, from it being in Dale Jr.'s graveyard, which I doubt, to the insane ones, which, when they repaved Daytona in 2010, it was buried under the start finish line, or it's at the bottom of Lake Lloyd. Those are, of course, incredibly outlandish and works of accelerated imagination. Wherever Earnhardt's car is now, it's the right of his family members and loved ones to know, and us to not ask. For two other deaths that occurred in the year 2000 at New Hampshire, Kenny Irwin Jr. and Adam Petty. Adam in 2000 was killed in a horrific crash, and while I can't confirm this from what I understand, before the team could decide what to do with Adam's car, NASCAR confiscated it to study for safety improvement. Again, I can't confirm that. When Kenny passed away in July of that year, 3 months after Adam, the team got the car back for a short period of time. They apparently did not want to let NASCAR have the car, and instead took it into a field at night. The crew stood together and lit the car on fire, quickly throwing in all of the team gear and memorabilia. They burned everything they had that was associated with that weekend. It was the team's way to pay tribute to Kenny. A touching way to send off a car your driver was killed in. Just brought any crew member, crew chief, or even owner. They have to deal with the death of a driver, and on many occasions also a friend. It's undoubtedly the worst part of the sport. The part that makes you doubt if it is all really worth it. To Kenny Irwin Jr., and to all the drivers who have died pursuing what they loved, may they forever rest in peace.
I'm flying through the air. This is not good.
Ricky! Cool!
Comes to rest in a big cloud of smoke. Ricky Bobby appears to be okay, but that Wonder Bread car is toast.
Fantastic.
Oh my God! Ricky!
Hakuna Matata, bitches.
It's okay, guys. It's just a wreck. Ricky can handle it.
Now that's one of the nastiest wrecks you'll ever see.
No, 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 oh.
It's all right, you're safe. You're safe. We got you.
We're here. I'm on fire.
Okay.
It's all right, you're not on fire.
I knew it, you're lying. I'm burned. I'm on fire.
There is no fire.
I'm on fire.
Come back here.
But something looks wrong. I mean, he's running around like he's on fire.
Oh, my God, help me. I don't want to die. Oh, stop, drop, and roll.
You're not on fire, Ricky Bobby.
I'm on fire.
You're not on fire. But I'm not even sure he even knows where he's at right now.
This makes us all realize the kind of pressure these drivers are under.
Mr. Bobby, come on down here.
Help me, Jesus. Help me, Jewish God. Help me, Allah. Ah! Help me, Tom Cruise.
But how did he get down to his underwear that fast?
Tom Cruise used a witchcraft on me to get the fire off me.
Look, here, help's coming.
Wait a minute.
It's Cal Naughton.
Oh, God! Please don't let the invisible fire burn my friend!
He's jumping on Ricky, trying to put the non-existent fire out.
Now, that's a teammate right there.
This is going downhill fast. I think it'd be a great time to go to commercial break myself.
Help me, Oprah Winfrey!
You know, Larry, there's good days in racing, and there's bad days. Ricky Bobby just had himself a bad day.